What's up, everybody? It's Bretzky, and America is turning 250. And I can't think of a better way to celebrate that than playing on an American-owned social casino, SpinQuest.com. With all of your favorite games, live craps, bubble craps, live blackjack, there's no better place to play for free and win real cash prizes. SpinQuest.com.
SpinQuest is a free-to-play social casino. Void where prohibited. Visit SpinQuest.com for more details.
D-Maze, Fink, and Adonic, 102.5, 106.3 of the game. Broadcasting from the Busy Bee Plumbing, Heating, and Air Conditioning Game Nashville Studios, home of the $99 yearly Beehive membership where the buzz is always about great service. Willie Adonic, Derek Mason, Adam Vingan here with you live at Bridgestone Arena. Penguins and Predators tonight at 7, puck drop at 6, right here on 102.5, 106.3 the game. Joining us on our phone line, driven by WilsonCountyHyundai.com, the self-proclaimed number one hockey hit on this station every week, Elliot Freeman, Sportsnet's NHL insider, co-host of the 32 Thoughts podcast and author of the 32 Thoughts column. Elliot, last night the Predators make a trade, swapping defensemen. Out goes Alex Carrier, in comes Justin Barron. I would love your thoughts on the transaction itself. And for Predators fans who may be unfamiliar with Justin Barron, what more can you tell them?
Well, I would just say about Barron, he's a talented guy. He really is. But it just, like with a lot of young players, some of them, they come in the NHL, they're stars right away, they find their place, and they go. With Barron, it hasn't been that linear. The skill is there. The talent is there. One of the issues, I think, for Montreal and their blue line is their blue line is very, very young. They have, and one of the reasons that Montreal has had some of the results it had this year is because too many of their defensemen are very young and still learning how to play. And I think when you've got, like, they've got Matheson as a veteran, they've got Savard who's a veteran, they've got some really talented young kids, but when you have anywhere from one to four of those guys playing in the same lineup, it's too much, and it's been too much for them this year. I think Montreal knew they were going to have to make some decisions on some of their young defensemen this year because they have even more coming who are ready to play, and you could see a situation where Barron was going to get squeezed out. Like I said, he's a talented guy. He's got the ability. One of the real challenges he's had this year is dealing with pressure. And you could see other teams felt it, that when you pressured him, he would get a little uncertain, maybe a little bit panicky. And in a market like Montreal, you can't hide. They love you when you're great, and they pick you apart when you're struggling. And I think everybody kind of saw it. I think it's a good gamble for the Predators. I really do. I think the kid has talent. He needed a bit of a fresh start. He probably was going to get squeezed out by the other kids coming. And I think somewhere like Nashville, where you guys have a good history with defensemen, a very good history with defensemen, and also it's a bit quieter, I think it's a good place for him. I think he's got a chance, but the biggest thing he's got to learn, Adam, is just handling pressure on the forecheck. If he can sort that out and figure out what to do, you're going to have a player there.
Barry Trotz held a news conference this morning before the Predators' morning skate to discuss the trade and just look ahead to the rest of the season. And Elliot, he did not directly concede that this season is, for a lack of a better term, a lost cause. But he's being real about the situation that the Predators are in standings-wise. We've seen them make a couple of other moves like this one, trading Scott Wedgwood to Colorado for Justus Ahonen, a younger goaltender. They're getting younger. They're clearing cap space. Trotz did say today, don't be surprised if I make another move, because if he sees a player out there that he likes, he's looking forward to next season. He wants this team to be right back in the mix, as this season has gone a bit haywire. What more do you think we could see from Barry Trotz? Is there a type of player, not a specific player, but is there a type of player you think that Trotz could be looking to bring in if he were to do that?
Well, you know, obviously, I still think the hunt is on for centers. Like, there's no question about that. By the way, Delgado cleared waivers today.
Breaking news.
Just to quickly update you on that one. You know, I mean, the guy, like, all of a sudden, you guys have a logjam on the blue line, right? And that Willsby, I mean, that goal he scored the other night, when I saw that, I was like, oh, that guy's not going anywhere. nothing's happening to him. But I think it's a situation where all of a sudden you guys have options on your blue line. And that was one of the things you guys were kind of looking at, was what are you going to do with the blue line? What's going to happen there? And basically the answer got sorted out internally. And that was Willsby playing well, and all of a sudden you have too many bodies. So what's the one thing you guys are still dealing with? It's the center. And to me, that's the thing that Trotz is going to continue to hunt as long as he can until he finds an answer. And, you know, I know that one of the guys that I think you guys have been around, I think some of your local reporters have mentioned it, and there's a lot of competition for him. And I think also is a question of what exactly is Buffalo going to do here is Dylan Cousins. I think there's a lot of teams circling around that guy, and Buffalo's going to have to make a decision with what they want to do. And so I think that's the kind of guy that Trotz is going to be looking at. And the other thing about a guy like Cousins, too, is he's signed long-term. And that's going to make him attractive. So, A, Buffalo's got to figure out what to do there. And, B, number two is, can Nashville outbid probably a ton of other teams for that kind of player? But that's the kind of player I think Barry's going to be looking at.
So let's talk about Dylan Cousins for a second, Elliot, because you set the city of Vancouver ablaze on Monday when you made a mock trade on the podcast. You clarified that it was in your own head, but you suggested Cousins and Bowen Byram for Elias Pettersson. So with Cousins being a young player in his early 20s, had a breakout season a couple of years ago. You mentioned he signed long-term. He has a $7-ish million cap at all of those things. What do you see as a reasonable acquisition cost for Dylan Cousins? Mm-hmm. Because if you're mentioning Elias Pettersson, who is the fifth highest paid player in the NHL, a 100-point mm-hmm. scorer not too long ago, clearly you're going to have to make a big proposal to get a player like Cousins.
Well, absolutely. You're going to have to, because not only is a situation where he's a talented young player, but there's a lot of interest in him. And as a result, you've got a situation where you're not only trying to make the trade, you're trying to beat other people to get the deal done, right? So it's going to have to be big. Buffalo, one of the things they've talked about was if they do trade someone off their roster who they consider a good player, and Cousins is a good player, even though he struggled, they don't want to go backwards. Now, it's a crazy thing to say, Adam, because they've lost, 10 games in a row?
Yes.
And so you sit there and say, well, how can they make themselves worse? I think they look at themselves on paper, and I think a lot of people look at them on paper, and say they're not as bad as this record indicates. And I think, Cousins is a guy who would have value. He's 23 years old. He scored 30 goals 2 years ago. He's a right-hand shot. Even though he hasn't played well and the fans there are down on him, it doesn't mean he's a bad player. So I think this, I think Nashville would be dumb not to be in the conversation about it, but it's like, if this does happen, if that player gets traded, it's going to be a big price. You guys know, you guys have a lot of draft capital. But Buffalo's not necessarily looking for picks and prospects. They're looking for players that can help them.
We're talking with Elliot Friedman, 32 Thoughts Podcast, discussing the Nashville Predators. Now, Elliot, when Roman Josi went down, I think everyone was, especially fans, were like, man, here we go. you know, having our best player end up getting hurt. But yeah. It seems like within the last three games that he's been out, but really a five-game stint, that this team has looked different from Jonathan Marchessault to Novak, Willsby. We talked about scoring his first goal. What are you seeing from this team? Because I look at a guy like Jonathan Marchessault, who we have been wanting and asking, like, when is this guy going to come on? But he had three goals in the last five games. He has a point in just about every game in that five-game span, with the exception of one. So it seems like he's starting to figure it out. But minus Roman Josi, what have you seen from this team since his injury that you didn't see in prior weeks?
Sorry about that, Derek. I just got a text I had to look at. Can you please repeat that? I apologize.
No. I understand that. No, I was saying, what have you seen from this team in the last five games that you haven't seen from them prior to that? Because you throw in the Roman Josi being injured, but you look at guys like Jonathan Marchessault, who we have been wondering, like, where's this guy at? And then all of a sudden he has three goals, five games. He has a point in just about every game within those five games, with the exception of one. You see Willsby has his first goal, Novak as well. Are you seeing something different from this team since the injury?
Yeah, you know, I think, like, Derek, like, you played sports long enough to know that one man's injury is another man's opportunity, right? Mm-hmm. And I think that's the way you have to look at it. I think with the Marchessault thing in particular, you're hoping it's not like a blip. You're hoping that this is a sign that he's figuring out and carving his space, right? And that's one of the things here that we're looking at, is that maybe we've finally got a spot where Marchessault feels comfortable in Nashville. He's figuring out his role on the team, and this is going to be him starting to take off. I think it's too soon to proclaim that, but at least you can look at it and you can say, okay, we're getting something here that we can build on. I think the one thing for me that's been interesting is, all of a sudden, like I said before, all of a sudden you guys had a bunch of defensemen. You're trying to figure out, okay, where are we going here? Is Willsby going to be the guy who stays? Is Delgaiso going to be the guy who stays? Carrier, you just re-signed. And now in a quick 24 hours, not even, your blue line has been kind of remodeled a little bit. Delgaiso's back in the American Hockey League. Carrier's in Montreal. And Willsby looks like he's going to be a player for you. Although, again, like, he has to keep building towards it. I think that's probably the thing I would say that we've kind of noticed the most in the last couple of games, Derek, is that maybe your blue line is going to be a little bit different than you thought. Like, Carrier was a big deal when you guys re-signed him. There was a lot out there for him. And you guys re-signed him, and I think we just kind of figured that, okay, we take it for granted that Alexander Carrier is going to be a national predator for a long time. And now it didn't even last half a season. And it just shows you how quickly sports can change. But I think it also shows you over the last few games that suddenly the Predators have a different picture of their blue line than maybe they had as recently as 3 months ago.
It's an interesting point, because that is, I think, what's hard for fans to follow, because it has changed so fast. Elliot Friedman is with us. And, Elliot, I guess with the roster freeze coming up, do you think there's any chance that somebody big like a Cousins could be traded before midnight tonight? Or do you think this is still sort of the groundwork that's being laid for something down the road?
I think that this year is not what you guys wanted, obviously. Like, that's not exactly a genius comment on my part, Willie. And I think, as a result, I think the way Barry is looking at it is, what do I do to make sure this doesn't happen again? And I thought some of the most interesting comment I heard was, I expect us to be active again. And it's interesting, because you don't see that a lot. You can't be active in free agency every year. But what I think he's trying to tell everybody is that the first 30 games of this season, the way it's gone, is it's not going to be acceptable to the team because it's not acceptable to the fan base. And look, like, you know, Nashville, it's a great NHL market, but you've got to sell tickets. And when you have a year like this, you're worried that, you know, your fans are going to say, this is not the product we want to see. So I think his comments, Willie, are as much about as this, it's not going to stay like this. Whatever went wrong this year, I want the fans to know and the players to know and the organization to know that we're going to fix this. So I think what he does, what's the most important thing you can have? Cap space. You know, he cleared a couple million in cap space by making this deal. And what I think he is saying is he wants the flexibility because he wants the ability to go out and fix this. And to me, that's what Barry Trotz is saying, that what happened, like some teams, they know they're going to lose for a while. Where Justin Barron just came from, Montreal, that was a true rebuild. And they know that they're not yet ready to start winning. But Nashville is not in that role, and they're letting their fans and everybody know that this is not going to be the status quo, and we're not going to allow that to happen. That, to me, is what Barry Trotz is saying as much as anything. And what he's doing with this deal is creating the flexibility to allow him to do more possible things.
Elliot, one thing that we saw from the press conference this morning was it started with the discussion of the trade, the decision to trade Carrier, and it evolved into a discussion about the whole season, the 30, 31 games that they've played, because it was more of a why did we get here? And one thing that came up that I wanted to bounce off of you, because it's not the normal, it may not be the normal way a team ends up where they are. And he said, I believe in analytics. And he talked about the shooting percentage being so low. So the, yeah. He talked about puck luck and the hockey guys. It's historically low, the shooting percentage. It's almost impossible to shoot as poorly as they have with the players and the track records they have. It'd be one thing if they were tanking or had a bunch of, expansion guys like Barry Trotz's first teams. That'd be a little more explainable. And his quote was, it's hard to explain the unexplainable. But he said, you know, the shooting percentage leads to a loss of confidence, etc. So I'll put it to you. When you see a team shooting, I think it's under 6%, it's under 4% in true shooting percentage, it's dead last in the league. How much can be explained with just puck luck? And if you're Barry Trotz, how do you interpret that stat alone?
Well, I think some of that is puck luck, but I think you ask yourself a lot of questions, Willie. Like, I don't ever think the answer, like, if I was running a team and you showed me that and you said it's just puck luck, that better be the last thing you investigated. Because the other things I'm wondering about is what kind of chances are we getting? And these are the questions I think a lot of teams ask when they hear, oh, okay, our shooting percentage is down. Does it mean we're shooting from too far out? Does it mean that one of the best chances to score is when you make a goalie go side to side? Are you creating chances like, you know, Stamkos with his famous one-timer?
Right. And as you example. Know, as you know, Elliot, there are stats that give you that to the analytics.
Yes.
And I think that expected goals, and I probably use it more, and people are like, Willie, the game isn't determined by expected goals.
I use it a lot.
But that is kind of the catch-all number that people look at. And according to, at least on Sport Logic we use, they should have, they're, based on the chances they've got and the things that you're describing, they should have about 20 more goals than they have. But again, how much of that do you say, well, that's just unlucky, or B, why is that happening, and how do you filter, how do you balance the two?
Well, I think this, like the, one of the other things that happens too, and this is the other thing I think that's part of this, and I've heard this from players before, are they taking good shots in the sense that when a player actually shoots the puck, is the shot he's taking, does it have a reasonable chance to go in? Like, are they picking a corner or are they hitting the crest? I think that also becomes a question.
Right.
Like, okay, maybe you set up a great scoring chance, but if a guy shoots it right in the crest of the goalie, that's useless. Now, do I believe in puck luck? Yes, I do. I do believe it. One of the things I hated about the whole Moneyball thing, Willie, is that, you know, when Billy Beane said we have a great team in the regular season, the playoffs are all luck. That makes me crazy because it gave a whole generation of people license to say the playoffs are all luck. I don't believe that. Do I believe that there is some luck? Yes. But I also do believe, and especially in a sport like the NHL, there's no sport that changes more from regular season to playoffs than hockey does. And people blame it on refereeing. I don't think it's all that. I think it's also the players. Like, the players will kill each other in the postseason, and they won't do that as much in the regular season. Like, everybody just changes. I really do believe that. Anyway, I do think, like, the thing is, like I'm watching the goal the other night that Patrick Laine got against Buffalo on the power play. Like, Luukkonen, the Buffalo goalie, he gets over there, and Laine just picks a spot. Like, there's only about, like, there's inches he has to beat that goalie, and he puts it there.
Yep, he scored one on the Predators like that.
Exactly. So, to me, it's like, and I've talked to players about this, like, you know, can you teach shooting? Absolutely, you can teach shooting. And one of the things they talk about is, it sounds great, but when you're in a game and you're under pressure and there's a lead goalie on the other end, like, you're trying to fire it as quick as you can, and they're better than ever about making perfect shots, but you still have to make the perfect shot. Like I've said it to you guys many times, and I'll say it again, I cannot believe what's happened this year with your goal scoring. Like, if you would have told me that Nashville would have had problems this year, the last thing on my list, the last thing on my list would have been Saros, and the second last thing on my list would be scoring goals. Like, so I am astonished at this. And I believe a number of your players are, like, on career low shooting percentages too. Like, I just believe that's going to change. Unless you're telling me a player has fallen off the cliff, then I do believe that's going to change. But it's, you know, is it some luck? Yes. But I think one of the things the Predators have also talked about, and we've talked about this, is, are there differences that we can play, the way we can play that can help us? And they've done that. I think that says a lot about they're trying to find the solutions.
Elliot Freeman, Sportsnet NHL insider, joining us as he does every Thursday afternoon. Elliot, great stuff. Have a wonderful holiday, and we'll talk next week.
Merry Christmas and happy holidays to all the great hockey fans, and there are lots of them, of the Nashville Predators.
Great stuff, Elliot. Thank you so much. Elliot Freeman joining us on the program as he does every week. 615-737-1025. Willie Donick, Derek Mason, Adam Bingham, 1025-1063. The game.
I don't think that that's the end of the conversation. I still believe that I can be the franchise quarterback for this team. I have the utmost confidence in myself and my ability to lead any team in this league. And I think that this year was great development for me, and I think that I truly did improve. And sure as heck don't want to go out like that. And I know that, you know, There's a positive future for me, whether it's here or somewhere else, and I just gotta, you know, have the conversations I need to here, and hopefully I can show and prove that I can still be the guy.
That was Will Levis yesterday. You know that a quarterback switch has happened when the starting quarterback, who usually addresses reporters at the podium, has a scrum around his locker. That's when you know life has changed as a quarterback in the NFL. I remember when Marcus Mariota made that change from the podium to the locker stall. It's a step down, but that's where Will Levis is. He's the backup quarterback of the Tennessee Titans. Mason Rudolph starting against the Indianapolis Colts, and Brian Callahan said that they're taking it week by week. We'll see. I'm skeptical we'll see Will Levis in action again, barring injury, but we'll see. Things will change. But what did you make of how he handled those questions yesterday?
I think he's a guy that's resigned to, listen, it's not my job anymore. And I think he's sort of trying to set himself up mentally for there to potentially be a move being made with him, whether it be releasing him before the season start next year, or trading him. Because anytime a player says, you know, whether it be here or somewhere else, in their mind, they're trying to get themselves sort of prepared for what can potentially happen. Because, listen, when you go from being a second round pick, to being a starter your first year, albeit it was half the season or a portion of the season, to coming in as a starter, but there's still being some questions, and then you go into the season and everything seems to go opposite of what you thought this season was going to look like, and then you get benched at the end, yeah, your mind starts, you try to start to get yourself prepared for, I may not be here next year. So I know I can still play this game. I believe I can still play this game. And I want to show everybody that I can play this game, but it may not be, whether it be here or somewhere else. I know I can show that I can play in this league and be a starter in this league. To me, that's a guy that's trying to psych himself or prepare himself that he may potentially be released or traded. More than likely, traded, not released.
I mean, I think from a financial aspect, Willie, you've talked a lot about the contract situation with Will Levis because he wasn't a first-round quarterback. And let's just mention this in all of the conversation about Will Levis. If there is a saving grace in all of this, he was a second-round pick. Can you imagine if he went as high as some people said he was going to go near the top of the first round, the Titans took him there, and all of this was happening?
Right, but still people want to put it on Rand Carthon for whiffing on a quarterback pick when that is the case. There are every year two or three first-round quarterback picks that don't work out on some level, whether – it's Kenny Pickett, who showed some promise early on. Like, oh, this guy's good. And now he's completely gone, and they've moved on in a completely different direction. They scrapped it. There's a lot of pathways that it takes.
Pickett is a good example, though, because Pickett was benched for Mason Rudolph, if I'm not mistaken. Or is it Trubisky, then Rudolph? I can't remember the order.
Rudolph's been there for a long time.
Right.
So there was a couple of different stints where he got a chance to play for one reason or another. But
Pickett didn't want to be in Pittsburgh anymore, right? They had to ship him out. Like, he did not want to be in the position that he was in.
But it's different on a first-round contract as opposed
to
a second-round contract.
And that's my point, is that the financial situation for Levis, keeping him on the roster, it barely makes a dent on your cap, where I don't know where Jared is. I know that's a banned word on his program. But it makes a dent. It barely makes a dent. So that is a positive. If there's a positive in all of this, that it's there.
I would say that as poorly as he's played, I think as a young player, in next year's salary cap situation, if I'm penciling him as the backup, then I think he's probably better than a few of the backups that are out there, especially if he still continues to work hard. It may not be what he wants to hear, but at this point, he's the lowest rated quarterback in the game that is played, other than Deshaun Watson, who is about to be off of the chart of qualified quarterbacks because he's been hurt for several weeks. He only played seven games. So at the end of the year, Will Levis will probably be the lowest rated quarterback in the key metrics in the league. So what do you want them to do? But still, I would say if he keeps working, there's going to be a shock, right? It's hard to ask that guy that question the day of. You're going to have it's an open wound, right? He's getting told it's a reality check. So how does he take it from here? He's not going to be traded. Nobody's going to trade for him in the offseason. The only recourse is to release him. And I don't know that I would do that, but only because he's so cheap, unless you just don't want him around or he causes a fuss behind the scenes.
Well, one thing I do want to bring up, Derek, you texted us yesterday. You are watching it's this Aaron Rodgers
enigma
Netflix. That's one word to describe Aaron Rodgers. This Aaron Rodgers enigma Netflix documentary. And you sent us a clip of one particular segment where Matt Flynn, who was a backup quarterback for the Green Bay Packers, right? He was backup for Rodgers, right? And then he got way overpaid in Seattle.
Yes.
Is that what happened?
Yeah,
right.
He played a couple of good games for the Packers when somebody was hurt, and everybody thought he was the real deal. And then
they went to Seattle.
Didn't go so well.
Yeah. Did that lead to Russell Wilson? Do I have that timeline
correctly? I think so, yeah. Yep, because they drafted Russell that same year.
Right. So Matt Flynn, who was a backup quarterback for Aaron Rodgers, and he was just talking about Rodgers, and this was the quote that you highlighted from Flynn. He said, quote, "Every quarterback in every team is different, but they all kind of take the shape of the quarterback's personality." And that seemed to resonate with you.
Yeah, it did, because I think ultimately it's true. I think because I go back to, my days of playing with Steve McNair. Steve McNair was unquestionably one of the toughest NFL players that I had been around. And even if you didn't see the team on a regular basis, and you watch Steve McNair, or you just heard, you automatically assume that must be a tough team, because I know Steve McNair is a tough-minded guy. He's a tough guy, period. But I know that's a strong, tough team because of their quarterback. And they were right. That's how we were, because of the quarterback, one of the reasons. But then there were other guys on that roster. But we took on the sort of personality of our leader, which was at the time Steve and Eddie. We took on their personalities. And I just felt that that was – hearing those words, they couldn't have rained no more true than any other thing.
So did you see the Titans taking on Levis's personality?
When I say I don't want to say incompetence, because I think Will's a competent player, but I just think how he sees the game, how he's so up and down as a quarterback.
He's volatile.
Yeah, he's volatile. That's how the team is. They're bad, but they're so up and down. That's why, to me, you can play a good first half and then come out in the second half and you not show up. Because essentially, that's what your quarterback is. Because if you had consistent quarterback play, you come out after half, and what happens? You play like your quarterback plays. So you look at all the great teams, Buffalo, Kansas City, Baltimore, the Lions.
Usually Cincinnati.
Exactly. Cincinnati. Their quarterback is what leads and drives it. So if we come out of half and we're up, typically, more than likely, in the second half, we're going to play the same type football. Because why? Our quarterback is consistent, which means our team, at least our offense, will be consistent. When you have an erratic quarterback, the personality and everything else that comes with it, you're going to have that type of team. Your quarterback's erratic, your team's erratic. Your quarterback's up and down, your team is up and down. Now, one thing I can say, Will Levis isn't soft. That's one thing he's not. He's mentally and physically tough. He just doesn't process things the way he needs to process them quick enough in this offense. But they do take on his personality as far as toughness. But also that comes with that, with him, is the erratic play. That's what you see in their offense, erratic play.
Adam from Portland is on our phone line, driven by WilsonCountyHyundai.com. Adam, thank you for calling. Please go ahead.
Yeah, man, I thought Levis did fine handling that. Like, he handled the conference like a pro. But when I look at how, like, his journey, it's really wild, man. Like, how much lease he's been given, the turnovers that he's had that's been so egregious all year. It makes me wonder if, because I hear Brian Callahan stand up for his players, that's great, but it makes me wonder if Rand was like, hey, my job's going to depend on this dude, so you got to keep him out there. I wonder how much of that was going on, because I sent this yesterday. You didn't answer, Adam. I would like for you to answer. If Patrick Mahomes was the quarterback of this team, how many wins would they have? I would say it would be at least 10. So
I think at least 10,
the quarterback this year. Yeah, so a lot of it fell on Levis, man, and I hope he bounces back, but I just don't want it to be with us, you know, and that's how I feel as a fan.
Thanks for calling.
That's quite extreme switch. it's an interesting question because they do have a lot of flaws on the roster beyond Levis, but
I've been asking
that question a different way. I've been asking it, if you got average quarterback play, would they be more of an average team? And I think the answer is yes. Because some of the turnovers and things like that's directly back to Levis. That's why they're as low as they are in turnover margin.
Yeah.
Levis is not only turnovers, but pick six, touchdown, can't do anything about it kind of turnovers. Like, that's a lot. The quarterback does have a lot of responsibility there.
Here is, I think, I sort of see it like this. You know, Brian Callahan, he had to make this decision. And he had to make it this week. Because here's the reason why. And you alluded to this, Willie, or it might have been Adam, both of you. It was a question from Adam, actually. What would you say once you get into that office with Amy? What are you going to say? She asked her questions about this team and where they're headed. Why should I keep you? What are the answers you're going to give me? Well, if I leave Will Levis in at quarterback, I'm going into her meeting with no ammunition, because it's going to continue to look as if you know, the process that we told you about, we're not nowhere near it, you know, or the plan that I have, we are nowhere near with Will Levis. But if I put Mason Rudolph in the game, what Mason has shown is that he can stay on task. Is he the quarterback of the future for us? No. Is he a guy that we believe we can go 11-5 or 11-7 or 6? No. But he's a guy that can get in and play the position the way we want to be played and how you read the coverage and how you distribute the ball. He is a guy that can do that for us. He is a guy that we can stay on task with. He may not win us a game, but we can show, once we go into that office, we can show, hey, listen, if we had good quarterback play, this is what it can look like.
Right.
It lends more to us still being on task when I go in our office, as opposed to going in the office after Will Levis has started the last three games and it looks yep, absolutely bad. And what do I say
you
going into your office?
Point. You have a reference point
with Mason Rudolph. You're not going to have one with Will Levis.
615-737-1025. We'll wrap up the show with this. Titans fans, it could be worse, and we'll tell you why. Willie Donick, Derek Mason, Adam Vingan, 1025-1063, the game. D-Mace, Vingan, and Donick, 1025-1063, the game. Live at Bridgestone Arena. Predators, Penguins tonight at 7. Stillman and Company coming up next. Here on 1025-1063, the game, Barry Trotz will join Jared at 5 o'clock right here at Barrel House. So Titans fans, I said it could be worse. You could have, quote-unquote, the most dysfunctional place imaginable, which is how the New York Jets were described in a fascinating article in The Athletic today, written by Zach Rosenblatt, Diana Russini, and Michael Silver. And it's a worthwhile read for many reasons. But I just want to highlight the one part that went all over social media. The opening anecdote of the story is about Jets owner Woody Johnson. He was at his home in Palm Beach, Florida, discussing potential offseason acquisitions. Jerry Jeudy was among those players that Jets decision makers was targeting to bring in to help Aaron Rodgers. It got to a point where Joe Douglas, then the GM, and his counterpart in Denver, George Patton, were talking about a trade that would have sent Jeudy to the Jets and given Aaron Rodgers another potential playmaker. The Broncos felt the deal was near. Then abruptly, it all fell apart. In Denver's executive offices, they couldn't believe the reason why. Joe Douglas told the Broncos that Johnson didn't want to make the trade because the owner felt Jeudy's player rating in Madden NFL wasn't high enough.
That's reasonable.
Yeah,
it's a fascinating read. But I'm just letting you guys know that for the mess that the Titans appear to be, at least as far as we know, it's not this bad.
And with John, if that's the case, if you just Thank heard you. That, if you John Robinson, why would you even want to take a job
exactly,
like that? Well,
exactly.
I guess you would because there's only 32 of them and you want to get back in the biz. So I understand why you would think about it. But, man, if your owner, if indeed that is the truth, because you got to understand, you're talking about a regime that's been fired. And now all of a sudden, these stories are starting to come out. So is it a little bit of vindictiveness, truth? There may be some truth to it. I don't know. But if there's any truth to it, then, man, oh, man, the next person that takes this GM job, man, whoo, I feel for them.
Bless their heart.
I feel for them.
Jared didn't want to say this on the air, yeah, though he's standing right here. He did text me and said, you say it's not that bad, but the Jets have more wins and beat the Titans.
Because they got a competent quarterback. As much as we may hate Aaron, y'all may hate Aaron Rodgers, but I do recommend you watch the Netflix thing on Aaron Rodgers. As much as y'all may hate Aaron Rodgers, would y'all rather have him than Will Levis? Just answer that question.
I don't think anybody needs to answer that question.
I guess it was a rhetorical question.
It was a rhetorical question.
Pretty much so. So even Jared couldn't answer that question. Well, he didn't want to answer it. He knew what the answer would be anyway.
Well, maybe he'll tell us on his show.
I'm sure he will.
But at least
he always get the last laugh because he's the last show.
That is true. He does.
He
get
loves
the last.
It too. It's like playing it. But I'm sure he's gonna, home every week.
I'm sure he's going to give our stats on Haloti Ngata and Vince Wilfork
exactly,
in comparison to Tavondre Sweat and Tavondre Sweat's greats. I'm sure he'll use that.
Vince Wilfork,
because he always listens to what we say, absorbs it, says, you know, those guys, they've really done their homework. I'm gonna bring this to the table.
And he's gonna say, Derek said that Tavondre Sweat it's going to be a Hall of Famer.
That's what he's going to say.
Absolutely. That's what he's going to say. That's absolutely what he is going to say. Willie Donick thinks that Devondre Sweat is going to be Vince Wilford. Can you believe it? Your call, 615-737-1025.
But it works out for him because, like a hockey game when you're at home, you get the last shift change.
Yes,
so
that's exactly right. That'll do it for us. That'll do it for us today. Jared is coming up next. Catch us tomorrow. We will be at Ford Ice Center in Bellevue for Coats for Kids. Bring your donations. Win some prizes. Win some Predators tickets. We will be there live at 11. Actually, we start at 9 with Jason Big Joe through 6 o'clock with Stillman & Company at Ford Ice Center Bellevue. We'll see you there. Stillman & Company coming up next.
Be love. Love on your people. Have a wonderful, blessed, and safe Thursday. Peace.
Forget whatever plans you have this weekend because you're staying at home and playing on SpinQuest. And there's never been a better time to sign up than right now. New users get $30 coin packs for just $10. All the table games you love with hundreds of slot games and real cash prizes. That's at SpinQuest.com. SpinQuest.com.
SpinQuest is a free-to-play social casino. Void where prohibited. Visit SpinQuest.com for more details.